So tonight we're going to look at the gift of serving others. It's a gift found in Romans 12. And there's another gift called the gift of helping others in 1 Peter 4. And they are essentially the same kind of gift. And Paul's made a list in Romans of all the different kinds of gifts that the church needs in order to function effectively. And this is one of those gifts that contributes to the vitality and well-being of the local church. So what does this gift of serving others or helping others mean? So practically in the life of the church, it's like 101 different things. It could be visiting people in your small group. It could be visiting people who are unwell, community work, cleaning, helping leaders with practical things, helping people in the church, and maybe something like DIY. And if it is DIY, I'm not your person, so I'm not offering my services. So unlike the lady in the clip that I showed, who clearly doesn't have the gift of serving others or helping anyone, I thought of some characteristics of the gift that the people who have this gift usually have some or all of the following characteristics. So, right. So if you're somebody who's got the gift of serving other people, you're usually somebody who finds joy in helping other people. So maybe there's someone in your small group who's not feeling very well. You've gone out and picked the shopping up for them in Tesco, given it to them. And just that small thing, oh, you're buzzing about it. You feel really good. You feel really happy about it. The next one, an ability to see practical needs and a desire to meet them. So this is somebody you see, you're not somebody who waits to be asked to do anything. You see something needs doing and you're straight on. So for me, the photocopier out there just hates me. We're not friends. We don't get on. And the amount of time Sarah Meesday's walked in, seeing me in a bit of a flap, and just pushed a few buttons and solved the problem, that's really blessed me. So that's an example of somebody who sees a practical need. And the next one is someone who actively seeks opportunities to serve and help. So different to the second one, this one's somebody who doesn't just see something and gets on with it. Maybe Sian's organising a strawberry tea, and you're the sort of person who's like, right, Sian, what can I do? I want to help. I want to do something. You're somebody who really seeks out things to do. Fourth, you're somebody practical. So you might be somebody who'd hate to be doing something public, but if you could get on with something quietly behind the scenes, that would suit you just fine. Number five, endurance and stamina. Somebody with this gift is somebody who will often go beyond, you know, the physical capabilities, you know, beyond feeling tired, and will go on to complete a task and complete it well. And then the last one then is a sense of God's purpose. You're somebody who knows you were put on this planet to help other people. And so there's quite a few examples in the Bible of different servants, including Joseph when he served under Potiphar and Pharaoh, Timothy who served under Paul, and of course Jesus, our ultimate servant example. And in a modern day context, we can all think of people who fit this bill. And but for me, somebody who really fits this sort of model is my dad. And my dad's a Christian. He's a great guy. And he just loves to help people. Like, he's the sort of dad that when he comes around our house, he's like, pulls up the weeds on his way in. He, like, fixes the dodgy garden gate that's been hanging off his hinges for a year. And, like, when we have Sunday dinner, he's like, you can't wait to get up and do the dishes. And you're like, Dad, we've got a dishwasher, it's fine. But he's like, oh, I just want to do what I want to get in, you know, I just want to get stuck in. And he's the same at home with the neighbours. They know to call on his door. And when we were living at home, there was a lady who lived opposite. And she found it difficult to park the car on the drive, like some women and men, and men do. And Dad would go out and reverse it for her, and the job was done. But of course, with the context of this gift, this is a gift that is something that's meant to benefit the church. This is to build the church up. And with that in mind, we're just going to look at some principles that we can consider when we're thinking about the gift of serving others. So, having listened to some of these sort of character traits, you might be sitting back in your chair thinking, well, you know, that's great, but it's not really me, you know. Doing practical things doesn't really get my blood flowing. You know, I'm more into sort of gift of encouraging and, you know, evangelising. And but as I've been looking at this, this is a gift that, although it might not be our predominant gift, this is something that we can all be involved in and actively seek and embrace in our lives. And one of the things that I love and that drawed me to this church is the volunteering that goes on in this building and in this church. And there's just a servant heartedness that just seems to flow throughout the entire body. Julian and Sarah have obviously modelled it to us and the rest of the leadership team. And if you take Sunday mornings, for example, I sat down and tried to work out how many people it takes to put a sort of Sunday morning together. So how many people do you think it takes to sort of produce a Sunday morning service? I've made a sort of rough estimate. I think it's about 20 to 25 people all serving in different ways. Coffee, car park, worship, preaching, money, kids, all different things. And that's just on a Sunday morning alone, not to mention all the stuff that goes on throughout the week. And, you know, would all the people who are serving in that capacity say, I've got the gift of serving? Possibly not. But everyone involved is playing a vital role in building up the church and helping things function well. And this whole theme of serving is just something scriptural that Jesus taught continually throughout his ministry and also by Paul in the New Testament. And I'd just like to share Matthew 20. Then the mother of James and John came to Jesus with her sons. She knelt respectfully to ask a favour. What is your request? He asked. She replied, in your kingdom, please let my two sons sit in places of honour next to you, one on your right and the other on your left. But Jesus answered by saying to them, you don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of suffering I'm about to drink? Oh, yes, they replied, we are able. Jesus told them, you will indeed drink from my bitter cup, but I have no right to say who will sit on my right or my left. My Father has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen. When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. But Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. And Jesus knew that this whole idea of servanthood was a bit of a problem amongst his disciples. You know, they were getting a bit sort of hoity-toity about their position, and they had a wrong self-image of who they were. They thought that they were sort of somebody's, and Jesus was just teaching them about the real sort of essence of servanthood. And Paul backs this up in Philippians, and he says, make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. And as a church, you know, it's just important that we really get a hold of these scriptural principles. And, you know, before Paul itemizes the gifts in the chapter, he says, you know, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way that you think. And in a very real sense, this whole concept of serving and helping other people, it's countercultural. It's not what happens in our society. And we live in a very sort of consumer-orientated society where convenience and comfort are pursued as priorities. And so we as a church have a really exciting opportunity to actually say, no, this doesn't have to be like this. And, you know, the world says, well, why should I do this? And, you know, why bother doing that? And we say, here I am, you know, use me. And I just feel like we need to aspire to avoid a drive-through mentality, which, you know, the world sees, which says, you know, I'll turn up, I'll show up, and I'll go home. But let's, you know, just get a hold of who we are, spirit-filled Christians, and our vision as a church, and let's serve one another faithfully. And so with that, I'd just like to encourage us all in all the different areas that we're serving. You know, it's a great thing to do. God loves it. It glorifies Jesus. And, you know, if you're not serving or doing anything particularly active in the church, then, you know, talk to somebody in leadership, talk to a small group leader. And there's loads of different things that you can get involved with. There's plenty of rotas to put your names down on. So, we've looked at this gift, so we know now that although some people have it as a predominant gift, it's something we can all aspire to. And now we're just going to look at some principles and some attitudes of how we serve. And the number one thing that I've identified is this whole joyful attitude, to be happy and to be smiling in all that we do. And for me, like when I'm serving in the band, the things that often help me to serve effectively are when the people around me are happy and they're enjoying. And, you know, we have a lot of fun in the band, and obviously music lends itself to a lot of laughs. You know, people singing bum notes every now and then, starting songs in the wrong key, making up random words when you've forgotten the lines, and it's all good fun. And now then, one person who I just feel embodies this whole joyful, cheerful servant is Rob. And Rob, he's always up for a laugh. He doesn't take himself too seriously, and he's always good fun to be around. And obviously, me and Rob are neighbours in the same street. And we share lifts, obviously, to band and to band practice. And I know, as you know, living on the same street, chatting to Rob, that oftentimes Rob's maybe got in at 6:30, and then straight away he might have had a quick bite to eat, and he's out again to practice or to worship sessions. And I can honestly say, in the whole time that I've been serving with Rob, you know, he's never been grumpy. He's never been like, oh, why am I here? I'm tired. I haven't seen the kids. I'm hungry. You know, he's always just Rob. You know, he's always joyful, and I've learned a lot by just being around Rob and how to serve in that way. And Psalm 100 verse 2 says, in the Message, it says, applaud God, bring a gift of laughter. And I think that's just a good principle to remember when we're serving. And we also need to serve willingly. Now, so for those of you who don't know, I'm a primary school teacher up in Armford. And one of the things that I love about kids is the fact that they will literally volunteer for anything. And I mean anything. Like, if you ask one of them to go on a message from one end of the school to the other, they're like passing out with excitement, they can't wait to do it. Or, like, even like really mundane things, like, who wants to come up and rub the board out? They're like falling over themselves, they want to be the one that's up there doing it. And, you know, in some of the classes in the school, we've got like helper of the week charts, and they're all landed when it's their turn to go up on the board, and, you know, they're the main helper of the week. And, you know, somewhere between childhood and adulthood, we seem to lose that sort of willingness, that sort of childlike naivety to just serve and get on with whatever's been asked of us. And let's be honest, who has that slight sinking feeling when you can see a clipboard? You can see a clipboard coming round, and you know there's a rota that needs to be filled, or you're going to be asked to do something. And all of a sudden, you can catch the clipboard in the corner of your eye, and you're thinking to yourself, if I don't move soon, I'm going to be asked to do something. I've had a scarper quick. And all that time in small group, when the cleaning rota comes out. And everyone's very sort of humble and says, oh no, you do your dates first, and, you know, I'll pass it on, I'll do it at the end, you know. And hoping, you know, maybe it'll be full by the time it gets to me. And we're human, and it's normal. But it says in Romans 12, doesn't it, that we need to renew our minds, change our way of thinking. And, you know, wouldn't it be great if when Suzanne or whoever's coming round with the rotor to be filled in, that we're there, yes, count me in, I'll do it, I'll get on with it, use what I've got. That would just be an awesome thing for her and for whoever's organising things, and just really great for us to show God that, yeah, we're willing, we'll give him what we've got. And then, thirdly, we need to serve with faith and be focused on God. And while I was preparing this, God really spoke to me about the story of the feeding of the 5,000. And, in John 6, there's a situation where Jesus is teaching, the people have been sitting there all day, and people are getting hungry, and the disciples are starting to panic. They're thinking, oh, you know, we need to feed these people, it's getting a bit out of hand. And in the John 6 account of this story, we see a young boy who has 5 loaves and 2 fish to contribute to this situation. And Andrew, the disciple, probably acts like we would and is quite dismissive and say, well, you know, that's not going to get us very far. But, you know, Jesus, he takes the loaves, he takes the fish, and he gives thanks to God and begins feeding the people. And as we all know, a miracle happened that day. You know, at least 5,000 people got fed. And just that blind faith of that boy that he thought, I can make a difference with the little that I've got. And, you know, there's any number of ways that he could have responded during that situation. You might have thought, oh, I'm too shy, I don't want to say anything. I'll just sit here. Or he could have been like, oh, you know, there's no point. I mean, like, look how many people are here. This isn't going to make a dent. Or he could have been like, oh, maybe if I just give it to my family and, you know, we look after ourselves, you know, just keep it hush-hush. But he didn't. He just gave what he had to Jesus. And, you know, I believe that we can see amazing things begin to happen in our lives, in our ministries, when we commit the little that we have, when we say, God, just use me, take what I've got. And, you know, we see in the story that God multiplied the little that the boy gave, and God can do that with us. And I remember a couple of years ago when Donna's dad passed away, and, you know, it was a difficult time, it was a shock. And during the course of the week after it happened, I'll never forget when we pulled up to the house and on the doorstep was just a shepherd's pie. And, it so blessed us because, you know, we weren't eating properly, we were doing lots of things. And that just small little act of help just really meant the world to us. And, you know, we might never tell people that how much those little things count, but they do, they count a lot. And I just want to encourage us all to give what we got to God and not to ever underestimate the things that we do for others. And so, lastly, why do we serve? So, I'd like to share with you this passage in John 13, which I just feel cuts right to the heart of this whole issue of a whole area of servanthood. And in John 13, we read of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. And it was coming to Passover. Jesus knew that he was going to die soon. And during the supper that he was going to share with his disciples, he got up from the table, took off his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and began to wash the disciples' feet. And, you know, this is Jesus, the Messiah, God's Son, washing the disciples' feet. And, you know, just to give a bit of context about this whole scenario. Now, when it comes to feet, you know, I'm not a fan. I think my own feet are okay, but I'm not that interested in anyone else's. You just keep them to yourself. And in the context of this story, the disciples were, and everyone else was wearing open-toed sandals. And they walked everywhere. And unlike in our society where we have paved roads and pavements, their roads were essentially dirt tracks used by animals, used by people. And so they're covered with food, with animal manure, mud, dirt, pretty much anything else you can think of. And their feet would be pretty rank at the end of a working day. And I found this picture on the internet. And this is a guy who, he lives in New York, and he decided to walk around barefoot in New York for a day. And that's what his feet ended up looking like. And so, you know, that's probably something like what the disciples' feet would have been like during that time. I'll just remove that image for you. Now, at that time, in that culture, what would happen is that when you went to a home for like a meal or some sort of social gathering, the person that was in the most humbled position in the home would wash the feet of the guests. And if you were that person, you were probably bottom of the social ladder. You were essentially a slave in that home. But in this story, the disciples are in a borrowed room, so they're not in anyone's home. And for some reason, they'd all turned up in this room and no one had washed the feet. And, you know, this says a lot about the disciples. They obviously saw themselves as pretty equal to one another. They weren't aware, perhaps, of any social hierarchy in the room. And so they might have been sitting there thinking, well, I'm not going to wash their feet. And, or perhaps if I sit here long enough, you know, Andrew will do it or Philip will do it. You know, that's probably what they were thinking. And we know that prior to this, they'd been arguing who was the greatest and who was the most sort of important. And so it's obvious the kind of mindset they were in. And in the middle of this state of play, state of mind, Jesus comes and he humbles himself and says, I'll do it. He humbles himself, he washes away the dirt, the dust and the dung, and he cleans their feet. And what's striking about all of this is he cleans Judas's feet. You know, he does all the disciples, but in that group was Judas. And he knows what Judas has already done, and he knows that it's Judas that's going to hand him over to be killed. And just thinking about that, you know, the person that you've invested in, you've prayed together, you've taught, you've ate together, lived together, you've loved. And, you know, that same person is going to betray you in the worst way imaginable. And Jesus just does it. And there's so much in that one act that just humbles us and teaches us what it is to love and serve like Jesus did. And Jesus humbled himself in the most unimaginable and humiliating way that you can think of. And shortly after this account, you know, we read that he suffered the humiliation of the cross, that he was mocked publicly, beaten, bruised, abandoned for us. And, you know, we can be encouraged by that. This is our God. This is the example he set. And if Jesus, the Son of God, can do that, then why can't we? And, you know, let's be honest, we're not going to be asked to wash anyone's feet. We're not going to be persecuted. We're not going to go to prison for our faith. And that's all we're asked to do is to inconvenience ourselves. That's the worst that's going to happen to us, to show up, to turn up, to do, to be there, to serve. And I was thinking about this, and, you know, I know money's a problem, and, you know, it's a tough sort of economic climate, but, you know, I believe that for a lot of us, money isn't a primary stumbling block in our lives. You know, we make money, we spend money, money comes, money goes. I think a primary stumbling block for us is time. And I believe that we cling on to our time, sometimes more precious than we do to our own money. And is our attitude about time holding us back from serving God fully? Is our attitude about time sort of restricting us from serving God in the most full way? And so often the case is, yes, it is. And as I look at the example of Jesus, you know, I'm challenged, I'm humbled, and I'm just caused to look at myself and take stock. And just to finish, I'd like to share with you this passage from Philippians 2. It says this. Have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Therefore, God elevated him to the place of highest honour and gave him the name above all other names, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. And so, as we close, just to remind ourselves of what we've learned tonight, serving is for everyone. You know, some people have got the gift, but something we all need to walk in. Serving is a joy, so let's do it worshipfully, willingly, excellently, and lastly, serving is a privilege, because Jesus served us, and now we can serve him, and that's something we can really just be encouraged with tonight. Jesus, I thank you that you are our ultimate example in every walk of life. Father, I thank you that you sent Jesus to serve us, to show us what it is to serve and to be just the greatest servant. And I just pray, Lord, that we would really take this message, Lord, that we would understand that serving what you love and what you take pleasure in. And I just pray, Lord, that you would really empower us in our serving, Lord. I pray that you would call, out of love for you, Lord, that you would cause us to respond in giving our lives as a sacrifice for you, Lord. So thank you for your word, Lord, and I just pray that we will all have heard something from you tonight. Amen.